Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from Edvest and You, a loan product of the NEEF Network, a local nonprofit agency providing college student loans and student loan refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. On Friday, New Hampshire restaurant owners heard the news many had been waiting for. Next Monday, they can start serving diners indoors. There are some limits. Restaurants in southern and eastern counties must operate at half capacity, while northern and western counties can operate at 100%, as long as tables are 6 feet apart. Still, it was a welcome announcement for the state's restaurant industry after an extremely difficult 3 months. But it's still an open question as to how many customers will be ready or able to come back. This hour on The Exchange, we check in with the state's restaurant industry. But first, an update from this weekend's demonstrations in New Hampshire. There were at least 11 around the state to protest racism and police violence. Exchange producer Christina Phillips covered two of them, a Nashua vigil and a Concord demonstration. And she's with us now. And Christina, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Laura.
So what stood out to you from these two events that you covered, Christina?
Well, they were staged differently, so that is one thing that stood out to me. In Concord, there was a march, so the protesters began at Memorial Field by Concord High. They marched a little over a mile to the State House, where they paused to have some speeches and to read the names of Black people who have been killed by police violence in the U.S., and then they marched back to Memorial Field. And in Nashua, it was a vigil, so it was set up in Greeley Park at an outdoor stage, so people sort of stayed in one place. But what was similar about both of these demonstrations, and also true of the other two demonstrations that I went to the rally last weekend in Manchester and the vigil last Tuesday in Manchester, both organized by Black Lives Matter Manchester, is all four of these events really focused on young Black people in New Hampshire. We heard from those people helped organize it, and they were specifically talking about the ways that racism in New Hampshire has impacted them. So here's a little bit of that. These are the voices of Madeline Swenson and Keisha Johnson. They were at the Concord protest.
My own parents are scared for me to get my license because they don't want me to get pulled over for an unknown reason and get shot because I'm pulling out my license and my registration. I'm 16 and my two parents had to sit down and tell me and ask me, what are you gonna do when a cop pulls you over? I'm only 16. That is not okay.
I have a message for every single person who thinks we're making too big of a deal by speaking out and by protesting. I want you to look at yourselves and wonder, in 100 years, what are they going to think about you?
And then also, there was a strong emphasis on extending this momentum, this movement, beyond, you know, the last couple of weeks. And so here's Jordan Thompson. He's the founder of Black Lives Matter Nashua at the vigil there.
Do not just come to this vigil and then say, well, that's enough activism for me today. Do not come to this vigil today and then forget that Black Lives Matter next week. Do not allow this to be just a hashtag that you put in your Twitter bio.
Wow, okay. So, and that's a similar theme that we've been talking about on this show and that we've heard from activists. Let's not let it end here. How well attended, Christina, were these events?
Well, it's hard to estimate crowd size, and we try to stay away from that. But what I can definitely say is it wouldn't be lowballing it to say that there were several hundred people at both of these events, also at the other two events last week in Manchester. To give you sort of a visual picture, when the rally in Concord reached the State House, I was up on the State House steps looking out over the crowd, and I couldn't see the back of the crowd. People were all filling in that field in front of the State House. And in Nashua, this outdoor staging area, there's a sort of a grassy hill that looks over the staging area. And that area was full of people, and it stretched, you know, to the sides and sort of around the back of the stage. And so there was quite a significant turnout. And I think also we can't forget that at the same time that these two events were happening, there were a dozen other events around the state, sometimes overlapping. So just the scale of people turning out to protest across the state, it was pretty significant.
How much did all those protesters gathering together, you know where I'm going with this, Christina, how much did they follow the advice around large gatherings during a pandemic? We're supposedly only supposed to gather in groups of 10 or less.
Yeah, so at all four events, and especially in Nashua and in Concord this weekend, the organizers had masks and they asked in the event information, wear a mask, please observe social distancing. And so if you didn't have masks, they had them available for you. And during the march from Memorial Field to the State House, it was easier for people to spread out. And a lot of people did kind of spread out a little bit more in that procession. And of course, once we kind of congregated at the State House, it was a little bit harder to maintain that social distance. And so it was, I think a lot of people were wearing masks. I didn't see very many people that didn't have them, and people were avoiding touching each other. But it definitely was, you know, it was much larger than 10 people, and it was a pretty big crowd, especially for many of us who have not been out in big crowds. It was sort of stunning. But I also think this brings up a good point about the significance of the large number of these protests during the pandemic. And so I'll sort of let Sam Searles, she is the communications director of Black Lives Matter Nashua, explain that. This is what she spoke about at that vigil in Nashua.
Since apparently a pandemic can stop everything except for racism, I will be out here, even as a person at high risk. I recognize that racism is a virus, and I fully recognize that I could die from either.
Wow. Okay, so that's from the Nashua event. Police presence, Christina, at Nashua and in Concord.
So there were city police at both events in Concord. There were about a dozen or so Concord police officers. They had an escort for the march. The front and the back of the escort had cars, and there were police officers on bicycles and on foot sort of managing the traffic. And in Nashua, because the event was in one place, there were about a dozen Nashua police officers who were set up around the outsides of the crowd. They blocked off the road to allow people to enter and exit the vigil. And also in Concord, there were a few state police that I saw. But in general, it was sort of reflected what you would expect from any gathering of a large group of people in a public space. They were there to kind of make sure things were moving along and that everybody was safe.
You didn't see any negative interactions between police and demonstrators, Christina, in Nashua or Concord, recognizing that these were large events and you couldn't be anywhere.
Yeah, I did not see any negative interactions between the protesters or the police. There was one moment at the Concord protest where a couple of counter-protesters gathered at the back of the protest. And so as the protesters were moving to march back to Concord High School and Memorial Field, they encountered these people. There were less than a dozen of them, and they had Trump 2020 signs. They had an All Lives Matter sign, and several of them had assault rifles. And they said they were there to prevent looting and rioting. And the organizers of the protest in Concord said, we're going to keep marching. They were speaking over loudspeakers, continue on, don't engage, keep marching back. And actually what ended up happening was a few of those counter-protesters that had those assault rifles walked at the back of the procession back to Concord High School, and they were engaged in conversation with some of the Black Lives Matter organizers. You know, they were having a dialogue as they walked back. But other than that, there wasn't any sort of interactions that I witnessed like that.
Wow, so it was a dialogue between these counter-protesters armed with AK-47s, you said, mm-hmm. and with the protesters, a dialogue, not shouting.
Yeah, no, there was a little bit of shouting when people were first starting to leave the State House. And then the organizers of the Concord protest were very much like, please continue on. We want to continue marching. And then it was a couple of those organizers that were walking in the back with the counter-protesters that had those assault rifles.
What's next for this week, Christina, in terms of this evolving story we're seeing here in the state?
So I know that there is at least three, I believe maybe four, Black Lives Matter protests also planned for later this week. And also on our show tomorrow morning, we're going to talk about how we can put the context of these protests into the context of history. So what is unique about this moment, and how can we understand what we're seeing now by looking back at earlier protests over the last century, including in the civil rights movement? And so we're going to be thinking a lot about that tomorrow, and we'd love to hear from people who want to talk about their experiences and how this moment may feel different for them.
All right, Christina, thank you very much.
Thank you. And now I'm going to go screen calls for the rest of the hour.
Thanks a lot. That's Christina Phillips, producer for us on The Exchange, again, updating us on this weekend's protests in the Granite State. Let's turn now to our conversation about New Hampshire's restaurant industry, how it's fared under very tough conditions for 3 months, and what happens next when restaurants open up for indoor dining next week. Exchange listeners, we love your questions. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. We'd really like to hear from you, especially if you work in this industry. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Tom Boucher. He's CEO and owner of Great New Hampshire Restaurants, Inc., with a number of establishments in the Southern Tier and in Laconia. And Tom Boucher, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Hey, Laura. Thanks for having me.
And also with us, Chris Vio. He is chef and partner at the Greenleaf Restaurant in Milford. And Chris Vio, thank you very much for being with us as well. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, and Tom, to you first, just tell us, set the stage for us. How many restaurants does your company include? And what's kind of the atmosphere that you offer at your establishments?
So we have a total of 8 restaurants. Five of them, are T-Bones, which is a very family-friendly casual dining located in Salem, Hudson, Bedford, and Derry and Laconia. And then we also have CJ's Great West Grill in Manchester. And we also have 2 Copper Door restaurants, which are more upscale. They're not fine dining, but they are more upscale. There's one in Bedford and one in Salem. We've been in business for, it'll be 36 years this year that we've, our first T-Bones opened in 1984 in Salem.
Wow, 36 years. And nothing probably in your experience prepared you for this, Tom. What did that shutdown in March mean to you, both financially, obviously, but also personally?
Yeah, it was obviously a shocker. I remember it clear as day. We were down 20% leading up to that shutdown. We were down 20% in revenue. And I remember calling my partner, Mark Fenske, on Friday, March 13th, and telling him, hey, Mark, you know, we have to have a meeting with the leadership team. I'm not sure what's going to happen with sales. And what if they shut us down? And I'll never forget his statement. He's like, shut the restaurants down. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right.
And you know, lo and behold, March 16th, at 3:45, we got a call directly from the governor, my other partner, and he said, I'm going to come on at 4:00 and we're going to shut the restaurants down. And we were literally just planning a meeting that afternoon to discuss our strategy for being down 20%. And then I ripped up the agenda and said, we have a new agenda. We're getting shut down tomorrow. And we scrambled. I mean, Laura, it was a mad scramble. It still is. I tell people, I feel like we're building an airplane while flying it, and because there is no rule book for this, and it's changed every single week. We've had to adjust and adjust and adjust and change. And as we discussed earlier, just think on your feet. That's what we do every day in the restaurant business, and that's been the madness of this whole thing. Is you just don't know what's coming the next day.
Well, and Tom, I'm hearing some emotion in your voice for sure. And I understand. I mean, did you have to lay off a bunch of people, or what did this mean for your workers? You've got a lot of restaurants, so I'm guessing you have a lot of employees.
Yep. And it was the most difficult decision of my life, quite frankly. We have a private Facebook page called Staff Matters, where all of our employees can engage in this private page. We have a total of 700 employees. And that night, March 16th, I posted at 9:44. I remember the time. I remember the date, and told 600 employees that they were going to be furloughed the next morning. And so we kept on 100 full-time managers and office staff just to keep the restaurants open, doing curbside and takeout. And for that, up until we were able to open for outdoor dining, that's all we were doing. and you asked about the financial impact, we were down 80% in revenue for almost over 2 months, 80% year over year. And personally, my income personally is going to be down 80% this year.
Oh, sure.
You know, and I'm not sure people understand the gravity of that, but can you imagine if all of a sudden you just wake up and you find out your income is cut by 80% or your business revenue is cut by 80% with no warning whatsoever and no fault of yours either? That's the real frustrating part, is that we're in the situation not because of anything we did wrong as a restaurant business or as an industry. Of course, we did the right thing and we had to follow the state orders, but it's been devastating.
Well, in a couple minutes, I definitely want to ask you, Tom, how you pivoted, the types of food service you tried to offer, and then what outdoor dining was like for you. That came about a month ago. And then, of course, the announcement just late on Friday afternoon that indoor dining can begin in some limited capacity on Monday. But Chris, I want to bring you in as well. First of all, just tell us about your restaurant.
Yeah, so Greenleaf is located in Milford, New Hampshire. We opened up just over a year ago. And we are an upscale farm-to-table dining establishment. So we focus primarily on sourcing from local farms. I would say during the height of our season, 90% of our product is coming from the farms in the area. So we take pride in doing that. And I just reflect on my experiences through French restaurants and higher-end establishments to kind of merge the two dining scenes together to provide a more casual atmosphere where people can still experience farm-fresh cuisine in a setting that they might not be used to.
Wow. Yeah. I looked at pictures of your restaurant on Facebook. It looks beautiful. Outdoor seating and lights all strung up. And that farm to table idea certainly, you know, has been expanding in popularity. So you're probably having a good year when you first opened. But what did that mean for you to shut down so quickly, Chris, especially since you were so new?
Right. Yeah, coming into the winter season, we were like, all right, it's our slow season. We're going to be able to reflect. And then throughout January, February, our sales were still rising. And we were like, all right, maybe we won't have the chance to sit down and kind of regroup and refresh and plan for the new upcoming year. And then come March, it was pretty much starting after Valentine's Day, we started to see our sales drastically decrease. And we were like, what is going on? We know the news about the coronavirus was circulating, but we didn't think it was getting to the stage where it was going to affect our business that much. And come March, we were just struggling, trying to figure out how we were going to keep the doors open. And is some of the days that we were open worth even staying open, because the sales didn't make sense. We were pretty much paying our staff just to come on and not getting enough sales to cover the cost for the day. And it just came to the point where we were like, all right, we know something big is going to happen. So the upper management team got on a call all of Sunday, and we were just discussing what we would do to move forward, knowing that the restaurants were going to be closing. And come Monday, when they made that announcement, we had sent out an email to all of our staff and just let them know we need to have a mandatory all-staff meeting on the Tuesday, the 17th. And from that point on, we have 22 employees on at this moment, and we let 21 employees go. So the only person was our director of operations, and because we needed to figure out how we can move forward with this and completely restructure our business, which was never catered towards takeout.
Well, and that's what I wondered. I wanted to ask you that, Chris, and Tom, you as well. I mean, you know, I remember when all this happened, and you know, people tried to be cheerful and say, yeah, you know, some people can still do takeout and so forth. And they really encouraged Granite Staters to support their local restaurants by doing takeout. But Chris, you know, some restaurants here in Concord, for example, where I live, some are geared towards takeout and some just are not. I mean, what about your restaurant? Did takeout even work for you guys in any sort of way?
Takeout did work for us. It was great. And we had a great reception for it. But leading up to that point, we couldn't offer our current menu. So we had to completely strip down that menu to offer items that would be suitable towards a takeout atmosphere. I mean, we didn't want to present our beautiful dishes in takeout containers, which knowing that our sauces and purees would get splattered all over the place. And it just doesn't travel the same. So we had to kind of switch gears and move over towards a more family-geared family platters and items that would be comforting.
You really have to think about it, don't you, Chris? I mean, I'm thinking about ordering takeout. We've tried to order takeout every Friday to support the local restaurants here in Concord. And I got to say, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You get like soggy salads or, you know, I mean, you have to, as a chef, Chris, you have to really think about that, don't you? Some stuff is just not going to work.
Absolutely. You have to just be able to pivot. And as Tom's saying, you just have to be able to think on your feet because every day is constantly evolving. And even before the coronavirus, I mean, us as chefs are used to the daily change and knowing that nothing is going to be the same as it was the day prior. So yeah, being able to adapt and overcome and face these challenges as they come towards you and just take them heads on, you have to be able to be open to the aspect of this is going to be different and I need to take it. If I'm going for it, then you just have to put your head down and push.
Yeah, kind of sounds like hosting a radio show. You never know quite what to expect. And Tom Boucher, how about you? You know, people did make an effort to put the message out, support your local restaurants, order takeout. How did you, as someone who knows this business so well, look at that and say, sometimes that's going to work and sometimes it is not?
Yeah, you know, we were fortunate enough that we've always done takeout, so yeah, it was an easy transition for us. It wasn't really a transition; it was just a matter of just doing more volume for takeout. And the Chris brings up a very good point that, you know, our seared scallops at Copper Door don't look the same when you're not in our beautiful dining room and it's presented on nice plateware and you're drinking your nice martini out of a martini glass and you get in the takeout container and it just doesn't give the wow factor that you would inside the restaurant. And quite frankly, it's been a little frustrating at times hearing some online reviews of people saying, not a lot, but you know, it's been a few that say, geez, they're cutting back on their portions, which is 100% not true. It's just, it doesn't carry as well in a plastic takeout container. So that has been a challenge. But like Chris, we pared down our menus to be items that A, we can execute at a very high level and B, that travel well. So the menu is smaller, but we're slowly adding more items. Once we opened for outdoor dining, we did add more items. And when we open for indoor dining next week, we will have virtually every menu will be back to full scale. Not quite, but pretty close to that. I do want to bring up two different things. One is, I forgot to mention, when you said Concord, I completely forgot that we do have another restaurant in Concord, T-Bones. It's a brand new, built from the ground up, 10,000 square foot building that is done and it's ready to open. But we're not going to open it. We're just going to
Right off exit 12. You guys were just getting ready to open that. So it's just going to sit there for a while? Is that the plan?
And I'm very grateful to our bank, Primary Bank, which is a local community bank here in Bedford. They did the financing on it, and they've given us the grace to just say, open when you can, start paying when you can. And that's been a godsend because, you know, as you know, that kind of build out of a restaurant like that is millions of dollars. And so it's just going to sit there dark and wait to open with a big celebration where we can open under normal dining conditions, normal being the next phase three, which is pretty much back to normal dining conditions, which we anticipate. I think we'll see that sometime. I'm hoping July, maybe August, that would be the time frame. The other thing I wanted to mention was, you know, I mentioned that we laid off 600 people. We did apply for the PPP loans, which is the Paycheck Protection Program that was issued by the SBA from the federal government. And we were able to secure loans for each of our locations. We were funded on April 13th. The way the rules were structured at the time was that you had to employ all of your full-time employees back 100% over that 8-week period. And if you did, your expenses for that payroll, as well as health insurance, as well as your rent, interest on loans and utilities will all be forgiven. All those expenses will be forgiven. So we did that. We brought back 350 of our full-time employees. The part-timers still remain furloughed. And we did the right thing. We brought them back. We put them back to work. And as of today, we are now out of those funds. And so as of today, all those expenses are now going to start coming out of our reserves, as they did for the first 4 weeks. So we were bleeding about $100,000 a week during that first 4 weeks of shutdown. So now we're back in that same boat. And thank God we're going to be open next week for indoor dining, because we're going to need the help. We're still going to be losing money. Even at a 50% capacity, we lose money. And so with that, I've worked very closely with Senator Shaheen and her staff. They've been outstanding, helping us navigate this situation where what we're calling the first rounders of PPP, and believe me, there are thousands of restaurants that fall into this category. They're going to be in the same boat we are, being back to basically March 16th. And so we've worked with Senator Shaheen and Senator Marco Rubio from Florida. They're creating language right now, and I'm hoping to get it today, language to create a bill that will give the first rounders another bite at the apple. And I want people to understand that we're not asking for more money from the federal government that hasn't already been allocated. There's over $100 billion sitting in PPP2 money that hasn't been used. It's already been allocated. It's already been approved and voted on by Congress, signed by the president. So we're asking for half of what we took the first time. The first time the industry took $30 billion, we're asking for $15 billion in another round for the first rounders to get us to a place where we can open our dining rooms at full volume, because we're still going to lose money at a 50% volume.
Well, and Chris, real quickly to you too, did you guys also access some of that federal assistance, including these paycheck protection loans that Tom is mentioning?
We did. And we received our funds on the end of April. So yeah, just April 30th, we received ours. And because of all the restrictions and the guidelines, and there was a sense of fear of not knowing how to properly allocate the funds and what would be forgiven and whatnot, and doing the calculations for the full-time equivalents, having to bring back 16 of our employees in a time where we really only need 2 to 3, did not make too much sense for us. So we were constantly going back and forth with our banks, with our accountings, with our CPA firms, and asking them for guidance on how we should structure moving forward with the loan, because we didn't want to take out the full amount of the loan and then be stuck with this huge debt after the 8 week period. Well, six months after we spend the funds in the eight week period. So we did take about 2 weeks and just sitting on those funds and trying to figure out formulate a plan to move forward with how we can properly use those funds in a way that makes sense for our business. So we were able to bring on some of our staff, as we knew that the opening for outdoor dining was coming on board. And that did help us get through some of the takeout period and also get through the opening of the outdoor dining, because we did need to set up a whole new dining area. We had to redo our front patio to make it more appealing and let people know that it's inviting, and we're doing all that we can, taking all the proper precautions for safety measures to make sure we're sanitizing, getting all the proper product in, and masks and PPE and all that, just to make sure that we know that we as the employer and employees are safe, and that the guests coming in are safe as well.
Well, I'm really interested in how the two of you sort of adapted to that introduction or reintroduction of outdoor dining. And a lot of restaurants around the state did expand their outdoor dining at that moment because they just thought, okay, let's do what we can. So after a short break, I want to ask you both more about how you worked with that. And then we can talk about the governor's announcement just Friday afternoon that as of next Monday, restaurants will be able to operate with indoor dining. All that's coming up, plus your phone calls at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, as New Hampshire's hard-hit restaurant industry prepares for indoor dining, we're looking at how this sector has been adapting and, in some cases, struggling. If you work in restaurants, let's hear from you. How's it going? What changes have you made? And how do you feel about the return of indoor dining? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook, tweet us, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We'd really like to hear about your experiences if you work in this industry, or if you love going out to eat, we'd love to hear from you too, of course. 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Tom Boucher, CEO and owner of Great New Hampshire Restaurants, Inc., with a number of establishments in the Southern Tier, also in Concord and Laconia. And also with us is Christopher Vio. He's chef and partner at the Greenleaf in Milford. That's a farm-to-table establishment that had just opened up about a year ago. And Chris, talk a little bit more, if you could please, about outdoor dining. So I think it was May 18th, the governor said, okay, you can do outdoor dining now. But that sounds great, but this is New Hampshire. The weather changes every 5 minutes. It's pretty cold in May sometimes. I think it snowed right around Mother's Day this year. So how did you work with that, Chris?
Right. Yeah. So as soon as we got the announcement that outdoor dining would become available, it was another scramble. I mean, even leading up to just doing the takeout, it was pretty much the feeling of opening up a whole new restaurant for us, because, again, we had to gear towards a stream that wasn't catered towards our business in the months prior. So opening up into takeout was a whole new aspect. Then we have to shift into outdoor dining. So, again, it's going like back and forth between how do we present the food that we wanted to for the outdoor dining. So now we have two new restaurants inside of one, which is just becoming on its 1 year anniversary.
Yeah.
So it was tricky times, but we knew that if we wanted to make things work, we had to get ready for that next phase of reopening. So we took our front sidewalk patio and we did some minor modifications to kind of gear it up for what was a little bit better than the last year when we were just scrambling to open up that. So we knew we had to get some more tables in there. We got some umbrellas. We were working with the town on expansion and working with our neighbors and our landlords to see what more space and how many more seats that we can get out there to kind of increase some of the capacity that we were doing. And then in the meantime, we knew we can get that aspect of dining open up before we launch into our Greenleaf Grill, is what we were calling it, which is down in our side parking lot, which is under a tent and has a whole different menu. With one chef just creating fantastic food down there, including lobster rolls and our signature burger, and just items that you can get only in a much more casual setting, where we have two fire pits. So we knew that area was going to take a little bit longer for us to get together. So we waited for the week after the outdoor dining to open that section. So it was pretty much a 2 week phase that we wanted to kind of grow into there. To be able to revamp our menus and continue to offer the takeout while getting ready to open the outdoor dining.
Wow, that's interesting. So you expanded your front patio as much as you could, because tables have to be 6 feet apart at least. But you also opened up kind of a whole new side restaurant in your parking lot. Is that right, Chris?
That is correct.
That's pretty innovative, and you probably had to move pretty quickly to do that. How has that worked with people? Are they drawn to it? And by the way, if the parking lot is taken up by half a restaurant, or half the parking lot's taken up by a restaurant, where are people parking?
Correct. And that's been the ongoing issue. Even before we opened up Greenleaf, the common concerns was like, how can we have another business opening up when we still haven't addressed the issue of parking? It's all free parking down in the town oval, and it becomes very congested. So we have to be cognizant of the fact that we have in our building, we have 11 parking spaces. So now building into our parking lot, now we only have 5 parking spaces, which, again, it's deterring the guests from coming over because they know that parking is an issue. But we know that to make things work, we need to extend and have an additional 25 seats down there. And the luckily in the past 3 weeks, the weather has been super forgiving. I mean, we've had some extremely warm days. We've had some chilly nights, but in the times in between, we've still had guests come out, sit by the fire, enjoy their food on the patio. There's only been a couple drizzles of rain, so we've been extremely blessed with the weather that we have been having during this time of opening the outdoor dining.
Well, it can be extremely unpredictable, so I'm glad you at least have that going for you. I want to take a caller. This is Hannah in Troy. Go ahead, Hannah. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I work at a small family-owned restaurant in Keene, and we started the outdoor dining when that was allowed. We've been doing takeout the whole time, and business has been really good, but the problem we're running into is almost having too much call-in and balancing that with the outdoor dining, and now with the opportunity to have the indoor dining, it's just kind of managing all of that and having the space to store your regular plates, your takeout containers. So that's kind of an area of stress for us because business is doing well, but we don't have the space to accommodate all of that.
Oh, so sort of three different offerings, and where do you keep all the different equipment that you need for all those offerings? Hannah, if I could ask, what's your role at the restaurant?
I'm a waitress at Jim Eddie's in Keene.
And what kind of precautions is your employer giving you to keep you safe while you're on the job, Hannah?
So we have masks, gloves, and all of that stuff. We're trying to keep the 6 feet, you know, in the restaurant. It's just the restaurant is small, so it's hard to accommodate that when you have six or seven people coming to pick up an order, people calling to place an order, people wanting to do outside dining. So just kind of managing all of that is definitely different for us.
How do you feel, Hannah, about the announcement on Friday that indoor dining can be allowed starting next Monday? And you're in Cheshire County, so you could operate at 100% capacity if you wanted to.
It's exciting to have that prospect, but then it's just really stressful because it's just how do you manage all of that and just get everyone in and get people their food that still want to do the takeout that aren't feeling comfortable coming in. So it's exciting, but at the same time, we're feeling the stress trying to figure all of the logistics out.
Well, it's really good to hear from you, Hannah. Good luck to you. Thanks for calling in. And Tom, I'd love your comments on both what Hannah and Chris say, that you're trying to be flexible, you're trying to meet the rules of the moment and the needs of the moment. But just listening to Chris and Hannah, it's almost like you are running three different establishments, similar, but three sort of different micro businesses there. I wonder what you think about that, Tom.
Yeah, she's spot on. I mean, we're experiencing the exact same thing. You know, like Chris, we did put tents in our parking lot. We also, because of the demand, we actually expanded outside the tents in the parking lot. We're very fortunate that all of our restaurants have very large parking lots, so parking has not been an issue. And we don't think it'll even be an issue when we open for indoor. The weather has been amazing. it's been really, really helpful. But she's right. You're trying to manage three different areas, you know, so we're actually got four different areas. We've got tent dining, we've got parking lot dining, we have our regular outdoor dining area, and we have curbside, and we have takeout. So it's unbelievable. I will tell you, one of the things that we did do as a result of just consumers not really understanding, my guess is that we're actually seeing more new customers than we ever have, because there are restaurants that are just simply closed. And so we had a situation where our regular customers know that we have call ahead seating, which is basically you can call up, and if we're on a wait at 6 o'clock, they say it's going to be a half hour wait. You can put your name on the wait, and then you get there at 6:30 and you're sat. Well, new customers didn't know that, and they were getting upset watching party after party come in and being sat while they're still waiting, and they couldn't understand why they weren't getting sat. And we tried to explain it to them. So what that triggered was we went to reservations only on the day of. So at all of our restaurants right now, you have to call the day of and make a reservation. So it's fair for everyone that way. It allows our hostesses to properly manage the flow of traffic and time the tables. We actually restrict dining for an hour and 15 minutes, again, so that people have the opportunity to come out to eat. It's otherwise, we would have guests that would sit there for several hours, which wouldn't be beneficial, obviously, for the business, the employee, or other guests for that matter.
Yeah, that makes sense, because, yeah, you can't, again, you can't squeeze people too closely in together in your outdoor seating. And you're in a county, Tom, where you can only work at 50% capacity. So you really have to sort of manage the numbers there.
Yes. And our Laconia location, which is T-Bones and Cactus Jack's, we have two restaurants under one roof up there, right on Paugus Bay in Lake Winnipesaukee. And so they're in the Belknap County, which allows for 100% capacity next week. So between our outdoor dining, tent dining, indoor dining, their seating capacity will be a little bit higher than we normally would under normal dining conditions. So we're excited about that for sure. Interesting, our Salem T-Bones is the only restaurant that doesn't have outdoor dining. But we, again, we put the tent up. We did some rail and fencing in the parking lot and barriers to, for safety for vehicles. And they actually seat over 150. Not bad for a place that doesn't have any outdoor dining normally.
Well, and that's interesting. And after a short break, I want to ask both of you, you know, I've spoken to so many people since this pandemic began, obviously. And, you know, people have said that there are a couple practices and changes that they have been forced to make that they actually like, and they're going to stick with it. So that's something that you're touching on there, Tom, I think. And I'll ask both of you about that after a short break. And Hannah, thank you for calling. We'd love to hear from you if you work in the industry or just if you have been itching to go out to eat. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org.
Staying connected is so important right now, and NHPR is committed to being a place where we can all come together to stay informed as a community. I'm Rick Gamley, host of Morning Edition. The trusted news coverage you hear every day on NHPR is made possible because a community of listeners value this essential service enough to pitch in. Please join them as an NHPR sustaining member for just $10 a month. It's quick and easy at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, how New Hampshire's hard-hit restaurant industry is adapting, struggling, and what owners say would help them survive. Join us, especially if you work in this business. Tell us how it's going, what this pandemic has meant for you, and what you'd like to see change. You can send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We're talking this hour with Tom Boucher, CEO and owner of Great Restaurants, Great New Hampshire Restaurants, Inc., with a number of establishments in the Southern Tier, Laconia, and Concord. Also with us, Chris Vio, chef and partner at the Greenleaf in Milford, a farm-to-table establishment. And both of you, lots of calls coming in. Let's go to Susan in Milford. Hi, Susan. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say I think Chris is being modest about how Greenleaf has handled all of this. Besides having fabulous food, they, I think, have done the best job of any restaurant I've gone to for takeout and now for the outdoor dining. They really have created a great atmosphere with lights and flowers. And, you know, it's not just a bunch of tables sitting on the sidewalk. I think they've set the standard again.
And well, and
we actually do have enough parking in Milford, but everybody wants to park on the Oval. So if you're willing to walk 2 minutes, there's plenty of parking.
Yeah. Well, Susan, it's good to hear from you. So it sounds like you have both done the takeout and the outdoor dining. I know some people can't wait to go back out to eat, but some people, Susan, that I've talked to are nervous about going out to eat, including outdoor dining. How did that feel to you?
I agree with that. I think for me, honestly, the atmosphere has to be as nice for outdoor dining as it is for indoor dining to make it worth going. So mostly we're still doing takeout.
Okay. Susan, great to hear from you. Thank you very much. And Chris, what have you had to think about, especially for those customers who, you know, do feel nervous about coronavirus? They're eager to get out of the house, but they really don't want to be in close proximity with others.
Right. First, I want to say thank you very much, Susan, for your kind words. I do really appreciate that. And that kind of justifies all the work that we have been putting in to get our restaurant set up for the outdoor dining and takeout. So in that aspect, in regards to taking care of our staff and making sure that our guests do feel safe coming in and enjoying takeout from us, and now with the outdoor dining, we've, again, taken all the necessary steps to kind of get all the equipment and the sanitation devices and sprays and all that to be able to continue to effectively clean and disinfect all of our surfaces after any guests come in to use our restrooms or come in to pick up their takeout items. And as far as the staff is concerned, we purchased a no-contact thermometer, instant read thermometer. So every time they walk through the door, we check their temperature. We went through all the guidelines that the CDC suggested. And if anybody's feeling ill, we ask that they let us know. If they've been in contact with anybody who has contracted the coronavirus, they should let us know. They should stay away from the work environment. And we do have an open kitchen, so we are very cognizant of the fact that people can see everything that we're doing in regards to preparing their food. So we've received a bunch of compliments stating that they're glad to see that we're wearing masks, we're wearing gloves, we're washing our hands, we're taking care of the product as we're sending it out and getting it ready for them. Because again, these are scary times and we are in an open kitchen, and it's comforting to see that some places are taking the proper steps to ensure their staff safety and the guest safety.
Well, Susan, it's great to hear from you. And let's take another listener. This is John in Lebanon. Hi, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Morning. I was just curious if there are any statistics yet on how many restaurants are not going to reopen. We have three in Hanover that are not opening and one in Lebanon that I know of.
You know, John, go ahead. Did you want to say something else, John?
Opening.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really glad you called, John. And there are some restaurants in Concord, that, including a small one that I absolutely love, that is not reopening. It just can't make it work with outdoor only. It just doesn't work for them. And takeout was not an option for this restaurant. Tom, you don't have to give us exact numbers, but I wonder if you have heard of colleagues in the industry who have said, you know, I'm just not going to make it.
Yeah, I know of at least one in Bedford. Canoe. He also owns Scott Ouellette, also owns a few others around the state, but those are staying open. I know that one, there was a public announcement about Canoe. I've also talked to Mike Summers from the New Hampshire Lodging and Restaurant Association. He told me he knows of at least 30 restaurants in the state that are not going to reopen. It will be, I was talking with Mayor Joyce Craig yesterday. It'll be very interesting to see what happens come Monday. I know virtually every restaurant on Elm Street in Manchester is shut down. Not all of them, but it'll be interesting to see how many of them do open back up, because the ones that are shut down, they're not even doing takeout or curbside. So it's not going to be good, I can tell you that. I've heard projections of anywhere around 20% nationwide. Virtually all of them will be independents like Chris and I, and the estimates are 20% will never reopen, which is just alarming and very sad.
Part-time flexible jobs and so forth. Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I do want to bring up something that that we created. You know, your caller there was stating that she wanted, you know, more of a experience that Chris is providing. And we've also heard from people that, as you mentioned, Laura, that people may not be comfortable or still have fear of going out to eat. So we actually got really innovative and created a new business that was launched last week, and it's called Ding Dong Deliver, dingdongdeliver.com. And what it is we have a commissary in Manchester where we produce all of our butchering steak cuts and all of our desserts and quite a bit of prepared items like chicken pot pie for the restaurants. And we deliver them right now to the restaurants 5 days a week. So we created this concept so that people that are concerned of going out to eat, they can still get their favorite T-Bone, CJ's, Copper Door meals delivered directly to their home in a cooler, in a very chilled environment cooler, where you can either reheat the product or you can cook the product. So we have items like I just mentioned, chicken pot pie. They're packs, so they come with a variety of different things. Like a burger pack, you can get, it comes with corn on the cob and coleslaw and baked beans and all the sides that you need for the burger, the toppings, pickled chips and cubed watermelon. So it's like a whole meal that you can order and get it delivered to your house. We only deliver Thursday, Friday, and Saturday to zip codes in Manchester and Bedford, but it was a huge success. And we think, especially some of the senior people, you know, they want our food, but they just don't want to go out and get it because either they don't have the ability or they don't feel safe.
It's like takeout that you maybe have to do the final step on. Is that
exactly.
Is that correct?
Yeah,
which kind of gets to the soggy burger issue.
Yes,
you know,
exactly. You know, in fact, one of the items I just ordered it last week is we do lobster rolls. So it serves six people and you basically have all the ingredients. You get the lobster salad, but you build it yourself. So to your point, it still tastes fresh like you just ordered it in the restaurant.
Yeah. Well, John in Lebanon, thank you very much for calling. And we just have about 5 minutes left, and I wanted to ask both of you how you're thinking about, how you're preparing for the reintroduction of indoor dining. And just to be clear, both of you are in areas that have to operate at 50% capacity for indoor, although Tom has one restaurant in Laconia, which will be able to operate at 100%. Chris, how are you guys getting ready for this? We've been talking about how you all have been juggling plates between, you know, takeout and outdoor and everything else. But how are you thinking about this next phase?
So this next phase is going to be interesting. I mean, since the day that we had to close down the restaurant, we were already being proactive about what steps that we could take to modify the restaurant. And kind of because we did hit our 1 year mark, we kind of wanted to refresh the space. So we took apart all of our dining room tables, and my father was down there sanding them all down. He refinished them, put another 6 coats on them. And then as soon as we got the announcement that we were able to open up on June 15th, we were like, all right, it's go time. Let's bring those tables back up. Let's set up the dining room 6 feet apart. Let's see how the tables are going to be spaced. Let's see what we can do at the bar. And it's just having those conversations with the staff and letting them know this is where we're going with this. We are going to continue to offer the takeout. But again, because of our business was not structured to offer takeout, we're curious to see how the takeout will continue once we open up the dining room. And as the previous caller was saying, at her restaurant in Keene, we're struggling with the same thing, knowing that we have all of our dishes that we need to have on the line, as well as the takeout containers. How do we justify holding the space for the takeout? Will the takeout be worth continuing to operate? Or is it something that's just going to kind of phase itself out as people become more comfortable with coming out? And yeah. And even as Tom was saying, this pandemic has affected all those who had plans to open up a new venture or were in the process of opening up or had their opening date set for during the time of the closure. I mean, we have a culture bread and sandwich that was supposed to open back in, actually our opening date was slated for April 20th. And throughout the whole course of the pandemic, we were gearing up, purchasing all the equipment. So we're sitting on thousands of dollars of equipment in an empty space right up the road from Greenleaf that we have still not been able to open. So at this point now, knowing that the indoor dining is able to open, we're still getting ready and gearing up for opening culture. It's just now being able to juggle both businesses and see that Greenleaf indoor dining still needs to take priority while gearing up for opening culture and getting ready for that to expand in the hopes that it will be successful and be able to continue to operate and have the proactive nature of knowing that in the fall, this might change again.
Well, right. And so that's interesting. Tom mentioned that he has that restaurant sitting ready to go, but empty right off of exit 12 off of 93 in Concord. So you were ready to open another restaurant, Chris, and now that's kind of on hold.
It is on hold, yes. And luckily, we've been very fortunate and blessed with the landlord that owns that building, who's been very forgiving throughout this whole process in allowing us to continue to kind of phase things out and think about how we can move forward with the project and make sure that we are set up for success. So we're truly blessed, just as Tom was stating with his bank. We are just as fortunate with our landlord.
Well, got a really moving email that just came in from a waitress who did not want to give her name. She says, my restaurant is getting ready to open. We've worked really hard to get there, the owners especially. They've been amazing. I am still worried about a few things. Regulars expecting the restaurant to be the same. We've had to change our menus and practices. When we tried to serve to go for a brief period, it was exhausting and regulars were disappointed with menu changes. I'm nervous about patrons coming and not abiding by our safety requests. I've been out to local businesses that have signs that request customers to wear masks, and yet there are customers who refuse. This waitress says, I don't want to have to police people. She also says, I'm nervous about wearing a mask for a solid 7 to 8 hours. I wear a mask daily for errands, but never for more than 30 minutes, and that's hard enough. And here's what she says that's so moving. I just want patrons to be patient. Everything is new. We haven't done this before. I've seen other restaurants get poor feedback on Facebook after reopening. It has been a long, hard process, and once we actually open and begin to serve seated people, we're going to discover that we've got some things to work out still. It's a new world, she says. I do miss our customers very much, though, and I'm so looking forward to seeing and serving them all again. That is so moving, and I'm hearing in that voice, Tom, you know, just the stress of this brave new world, as she puts it, and trying to do your best, but it is not the same as it was before. And people just need to be a little bit kinder. By the way, I've heard this from other types of businesses as well, that customers just need to realize that people are doing their best. What do you think about this email that we got from this waitress, Tom? And I really want to thank this person for writing in.
Yeah, very, very, very well stated. And she feels the way a lot of industry employees feel right now. It's very difficult working under these conditions. And she's right. I think the customers need to understand that we haven't done this before, and to just be patient with us. Our staff has been unbelievable and working incredibly hard and have been so loyal. They can't wait for us to get back open next week. They're just so excited to be open for real indoor dining. And for the most part, our guests have been understanding. Like I mentioned earlier, there have been some that, for whatever reason, I think that that's just who they are as human beings. They try to find the negative and not the positive. And it's unfortunate, but I would say more than 90% of our guests have been incredibly supportive and understanding.
All right. Well, we could have talked a lot longer. I'm going to wrap it up there with both of you. I really appreciate your time. Tom Boucher, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Really, this was great to be able to talk this long on such an important time.
Well, that's Tom Boucher, CEO and owner of Great New Hampshire Restaurants, Inc. And Chris Vio, it was really good to talk to you, too. I appreciate your time.
I appreciate you having me on. And it's always great to have these open discussions and let people know that restaurants like Tom and ours are doing the best that we can to get ready for this next phase of opening.
All right. Well, that's Chris Vio, chef and partner at the Greenleaf in Milford, a farm-to-table establishment. You've been listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.